who is going to conduct our Al-Anon-Alateen meeting. Melinda? See you from Griffin.
Here I am.
Yes.
Good morning. I wish I could convey to each of you how much love and happiness and gratitude I feel in my heart today. There was a time when I felt extremely unworthy of love and felt unloved, and you have shown me or taught me that I am just a little bit better than I used to think I was. You have given me your love, and you have taught me that God loves me, and that makes me extremely happy this morning. Let's open our meeting with a moment of silent meditation, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The Al-Anon family groups are a fellowship of relatives and friends of alcoholics who share their experience, strength, and hope in order to solve their common problem of living with an alcoholic and to help others do the same. We believe alcoholism is an illness which can be arrested and that changed family attitudes can often aid recovery. The only requirement for membership is that there be a relative or a friend with a drinking problem. There are no dues for membership. Al-Anon is self-supporting through its own voluntary contributions. Al-Anon is not allied with any sect, denomination, political entity, organization, or institution, does not engage in any controversy, neither endorses or opposes any cause. Our primary purpose is to practice the Al-Anon program so we may help others with similar problems and aid the alcoholic through understanding and to grow spiritually ourselves. I guess everybody really knows who I am, but I am Melinda Jackson, and I am a member of the Between Al-Anon Family Group of Manchester. And I am the widow of an alcoholic, and I think I have one friend who's an alcoholic. So that qualifies me for being a member of the Al-Anon family groups. I've asked Pam to read our Al-Anon thought for the day.
Thank you, Melinda. I am Pam Abercrombie, the wife of an alcoholic and also the member of the Between Al-Anon group of Manchester. Our thought for today: in Al-Anon, we start by clearing out the debris of our own mistakes. We learn to recognize how much we ourselves have contributed to the destruction of our home life. This was no vacuum we were living in, with only the alcoholic doing all the damage. We reacted too and made things worse. We are asked here in Al-Anon to reflect on our own conduct. Did we talk too much, too loudly, and hysterically, when we should have kept silence? Did we oppress the unhappy drinker still further at hangover time with a black and sulking silence, with a few comforting words might have turned his thoughts toward looking for help? Our reminder today: how difficult it is to face our own shortcomings, how much easier it becomes when we face them together in Al-Anon, since many of us have been guilty unknowingly of the same mistakes. Make me grateful for having been shown a way out of my difficulties through the Al-Anon program of self-understanding. Make me humble enough to accept a new and more rational view of my life. Thank you, Melinda.
Thank you, Pam. When our speaker came in this morning, she said, the body's here. The only difference in her and me is that my body's a little more ample. I met our speaker several months ago when I took a friend of mine to an AA meeting in Columbus. And I immediately decided that this woman had grown a great deal in her Al-Anon program from the things that she said in our meetings. When we began talking about this fellowship, I suggested to the committee that we have she and her husband as speakers. I've grown to love this couple, and I feel especially close to Nancy. I'd like to introduce to you our speaker this morning, Nancy L. from Columbus.
Well, when I told Melinda this morning that the body was here, I really meant it. Somebody had said, you know, all the Lord wants is your body, and He'll do all the rest. He doesn't want your ability. I felt like I had a real tough act to follow after Salita's talk last night. It was just wonderful. Oh, and by the way, I'm Nancy Lanham, and I'm an Al-Anon. Back when I first came into Al-Anon and came out of the fog enough to try to start working the 12 steps, I came to the third step, made a decision to turn my will and my life over the care of God as I understood Him. And I really wanted to do this very badly, but I tacked on one big reservation, and that was, please, God, don't ask me to talk in front of groups of people. And I meant 5 or 10. That was a group. Nothing like this morning. But I think I've learned you don't bargain with God. This has been a fear all my life to do this. And it's one of my many shortcomings that Chuck had nothing to do with. Then I was asked 2 or 3 times to talk about Al-Anon last year to church groups, and I refused. And I felt so guilty that I should have been willing to talk about it, because I think it's important that Al-Anon, that people know that Al-Anon exists to help those who live with an alcoholic. So when Melinda asked me to talk right after Christmas, I thought, this is it. I've got to make up my mind to either say yes or run scared the rest of my life. So I said yes with many reservations about coming, but it had dawned on me that I was letting fear run my life and not God. I don't know why I'm stuck on fear this morning. It's been so much a part of my life. But I heard Louise Moore from Montgomery talk at Holy Trinity one time. I don't know whether any of you all have ever heard her, but she's a wonderful woman who qualifies for AA, though she never belonged. She had a spiritual awakening and was able to start with that. But she gave a talk on fear, and she said that God did not really want us to be afraid. That He did not want us to be afraid of anything. And that made an impression on me, and I believe it. That God doesn't want us to be afraid of anything. When I was thinking about what I would say, I couldn't really remember the past. I had difficulty. I've been in Al-Anon almost 4 years, and today is so good that it's just hard for me to remember all the years that weren't so good. Well, I was born in Columbus 40-something years ago, and I grew up in a home where drinking was a way of life. And Salita said last night that her home had become like a roadhouse. Well, that's what my home was like when I was a child. This was where everybody came for a drink and stayed up to 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And so that my foundation wasn't so good. I really believed when I grew up that anybody that didn't take a drink was a squire. That was the way I thought. My parents were divorced when I was 16, and I firmly believed that had it not been for alcohol, they might be have been together. And when I was 21 and Chuck was an officer's candidate school at Fort Benning, I met him, and about a year later, right after the end of World War II, we were married. And we ran around socially with with other couples, and we socially drank. We thought we were having a good time, and maybe back then we were, before the really big problem began. And Chuck went with the Knee-High Corporation, and we moved to West Virginia and then to North Carolina. And in the meantime, we had three children. And it was when we were living in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, that we both realized that he had a drinking problem. Now, I really didn't realize how bad it was because he traveled all week, and we both partied on the weekends. And I didn't realize that he was drinking heavily during the week, too. So he went to a doctor, and the doctor told him he didn't know what to do for him. He gave him some formaldehyde. I told Chuck the other night, formaldehyde, and he set me straight real quick. He said he might have been embalmed, but he wasn't that embalmed. So I really all the time thought it was formaldehyde he was taking. It was about this time that we decided to take the job and the geographical cure. At that time, we didn't know that's what we were taking, but we both thought that if he quit his job with the Knee-High Corporation, he was district manager and had an area where he had to travel all week, if he could be at home, then he wouldn't drink anymore like that. So he came back to Columbus to look for something else to do. And to show you how sick, well, even way back then, I'm trying to think what year it was. It must have been 1955 or 56. One Easter Sunday, when he was in Columbus, he called me, long distance in Chapel Hill, and he said, I'm in too bad a shape to take the real estate board test tomorrow. And there I was with three little children, 2, 4, and 6, and I didn't know what I was going to do about that up there in Chapel Hill. But what he wanted me to do was to call long distance to a doctor in Columbus that we both knew and tell him that Chuck had a drinking problem. And to show you how sick I was, I called the doctor. And he thought we were both nuts. And we were. We were both nuts. At this time, Chuck, something really important happened, and I'm glad it did, that Chuck went to this doctor, because he told Chuck then, he said, now look, I don't know what to do for somebody that's got a drinking problem, but he said, I'm going to tell you one thing. He said, don't start taking pills or tranquilizers. He said, you're better off on the booze, and if you're going to drink and can't give it up, don't try to switch to the other. And that stuck with Chuck, and I'm forever grateful that we didn't have to go through all that. Well, we moved back to Columbus, and of course, y'all all know what happened. It didn't get better, it got worse. And I often wished he was back on the road again. And so that for the next 11 years, his drinking just got worse, and our home life deteriorated. He deteriorated, and I deteriorated, and the children deteriorated, and our finances. And it was back, I guess about 3 years or 4 after we moved back to Columbus, that I had an emotional breakdown. I just could not cope. I guess perhaps the fact that I really had no foundation with God. I didn't know God. And I just had nothing really to sustain me. So that just one day I woke up and I couldn't face life anymore. Now, that's really hitting the bottom of the barrel. And I kind of consider this is when I got a hold on God's coattail, is what I call it, that I went to the Bradley Center, and the lady that I was supposed to see was an old maid lady, and I couldn't identify with her to save my soul. She didn't know what I was talking about, and I really was not getting any help there. So I just decided, well, somehow or other, I've got to pull out of this for my children's sake, because I love them so much, and they've got an alcoholic. I didn't know Chuck was an alcoholic, but I knew that things weren't right for a father, and I'm just going to have to somehow. And this type of thing is the sort of thing that you really want to go in the bedroom and shut the door and not come out anymore. And I used to have to pray to be able to drive the car to go to the grocery store, and pray to walk out the back door to hang up the laundry. It was pretty rough. And just, these were desperation prayers. I really didn't know God then. But somehow he must have heard me, and it really took about 7 years for me to get back up to the level of sick I was before that happened. We had tried, or Chuck had tried everything, hospitals and doctors and psychiatrists during this time. And he went to one doctor that he really liked. He went to him, I've forgotten how long, 4 or 5 years, because this doctor tried to taper him off. And he didn't tell him he had to quit drinking, you know, he was tapering him off. And it turned out later that this doctor was an alcoholic, turned dope addict, and it was more or less the blind leading the blind. I really think that he truly wanted to help Chuck, but he didn't know how. And Chuck had another doctor that told him he ought to take a 6 weeks vacation and a cruise somewhere. And Chuck really liked that doctor too, you know. He didn't tell him he had to take his wife along either. And I don't know, fortunately or unfortunately, we didn't have the finances for him to take a 6 weeks cruise. Well, during these 11 years, I had taken on all the responsibilities of the children, and I was busy as a bee doing all of the wrong things that I've learned since in Al-Anon that I was doing. I covered up. Even my best friends didn't know he was an alcoholic when he joined AA. I was really good at that covering up. And I'd call the office. Chuck was never stayed out of work very often. But when he did, I'd call him up with the old virus story. And I believe an alcoholic coined that word virus. I really do. I think somewhere along the line he came up with that because it covers a multitude of sins. Now, there was one. I don't want to stand up here and whitewash myself because I drank with Chuck. That when we socially drank, and then when he had become a problem drinker, I still drank with him. And I know what it is to wake up on Sunday morning and think, oh, good God, it's morning, instead of good morning, God. I have opened my eyes and peeked around, you know. This is another one of the many wrong things I did. And I think in the back of my mind, after a while, toward the last, I realized that this was wrong, that I wasn't helping him. But it eased the pain of being at home with an alcoholic. And but for the grace of God, I'd be one myself. The last year of Chuck's drinking, this was in 1966, I had really given up hope. I thought that he was going to die sometime within a year. I had put a year's limit on it, or he was going to Milledgeville. But for one thing for sure, he was going to lose his job. And I had a master plan that when he lost this job, we were going to move to Cuthbert, Georgia. Now, I'm sure Cuthbert's a fine town, but I've only been there once in my life, and I don't know a soul in Cuthbert. But this is how my mind was working and how confused and sick I was that we are going to move down there to Cuthbert, Georgia, and we're going to live in a house by the side of the road, one of those dirt yards, the chickens pecking around. And we're not going to have a thing to worry about because I'm going to raise vegetables. I'm a city girl. And I don't think I've ever had a pot plant or anything like that live. They all die. So I knew that we were all going to starve. I know that we would have all starved to death in less than a month probably, but in my mind, I thought, well, we won't have any bills. No telephone, no electricity, no water because we have a privy and a pump, you know. And, oh, I just had it all planned. And I'm so glad that it was about this time that Chuck called AA. I might be down there in Cuthbert, Georgia. Oh, man. But he, out of the blue one Monday, I didn't even know he had it on his mind. And the situation was really bad, I knew that. He called AA. And Bill C. came by to see him, bless his heart. And whatever he said to Chuck seemed to make sense to him because I didn't stay in the room. But before Bill left, he said, he didn't insist, but he strongly advised that I go to Al-Anon. And I didn't want to go. I didn't want to go because I was very nervous, and I had become withdrawn from people. I was afraid to be around people unless I knew them real well. But fortunately, he said that he'd bring his wife, who was in Al-Anon, and we'd all go together. So I thought, well, maybe I can do that. So, we had tried, as I said, so many things, and none of them had worked. I really didn't think AA would work. I didn't realize either that night that it was the most important night of my life. And that it was going to be the beginning of the most beautiful way of life I could possibly imagine. I think the first thing that I felt when I went to the Al-Anon meeting or into the building, St. Thomas Episcopal Church, May the 22nd, 1967, never will forget the date, was love. I just don't believe there's a thing like AA and Al-Anon love. It's just there and you can feel it. And I think I felt acceptance, which is something I hadn't felt for a long time. I had not even felt acceptable to myself, that I had become the kind of person that I didn't want to be. I had become a neurotic. I know a lot of AAs say that Al-Anon is neurotic. Well, I tell you, I was one. And I think that probably I caused more harm to our children than Chuck did with his drinking by my reaction to it. Because I screamed at him. Then I go to bed at night and I cry. Because I knew that this wasn't the way I wanted to be. And yet I didn't really know what to do about it. Well, and I went to... I don't really know that I heard a thing that first night at Al-Anon. It was just what I felt. But I went back and I kept going back. And I think really it was about 6 months before of going to open AA meetings too, before the pieces of the puzzle of alcoholism began to fall into place for me. And during those first 6 months, I don't believe I said a word other than hello and goodbye when I left. And then Chuck says somebody turned me on. Hadn't anybody been able to turn me off since? That's the truth. This is one time he's right. But I've heard sober alcoholics say they are a miracle. Well, I feel that I'm a miracle. I think I'm an up and down, all around, in every way, a miracle today. I just never realized that there could be this kind of life. It's so good. Sometimes I feel like I'm not making any progress. Maybe I'm in a slump or having a slip. But when I look back to what I was the night I went into Al-Anon, I'm reassured that I'm not the same person I was almost 4 years ago. And the thing is, I'm looking forward to the year so much now. Chuck, it really did take me a long time to get my mind unconfused, or for God to get it unconfused, because about 4 or 5 months after Chuck started going to AA, he started going to church. And believe it or not, I resented it. He was sober and going to church, and I just didn't appreciate it at all, because I thought, well, I've worked all week, and I deserved one morning in bed. But every morning, every Sunday morning, he'd get up, and there he'd go. And I'd lie there and resent and resent and resent. But then I had this mental vision of these little old ladies with the flowers on their hats, you know, in church, saying, look at that nice man over there. Comes to church every Sunday by himself. Wonder where his wife is. And I couldn't take that. So, oh, me pride. Got me to church, though. And, but, you know, another thing, besides this resentment, I think that I felt so much guilt that I had let alcoholism make of me the kind of person I had been. I had not gotten my children to Sunday school and church. They had had the same kind of life that I had had without the necessary things that you need to make you a secure person. And I was really afraid to go to church. I was so full of guilt, I thought God didn't want me there. But I went, and funny thing, I picked a church where the minister was an alcoholic, Jody R. I'm sure some of y'all know him, and that sort of made me feel like I had a friend, you know. But about halfway through the service, I thought, you know, God really wants me here. This is where I belonged all the time. How long have I been talking? Am I out of time?
No.
Okay. Well, I was just going to mention a few steps and what they've meant to me. The one about what is it that, you know, improve my conscious contact with God. And so when I started trying to work the 12 steps, I thought, well, this is the thing. I've got to go in my bedroom every night for an hour after work and meditate. So every night I set aside a time that I went in there and shut the door and meditated, and I come out and scream at the whole family because nothing was happening. I mean, here I am meditating and nothing happens. And it was most frustrating. I thought, how can I improve my conscious contact with God when I can't even find him, you know? So, and I knew, I think this is where the slogan, take it easy, comes in. I was trying too hard. But another thing, though, at that time, our daughter had been going with this steady, with this boy, for 4 years, and I had gotten to the point where I just detested him. I hated that boy. And things that he had done that were not honest, and I really had reason to talk to him, but certainly not to feel the, I don't know whether you'd call it hate or deep resentment that I felt toward him. And that things had come to a climax this weekend, and our daughter was just a senior in high school, and she had moved out of the house. And it was because of me. So I cried all weekend, and I read the Bible, and I'd open it up and say something, and nothing happened. And I thought, this is just it. I'm just at the bottom now. What if I'm a failure as a mother? And it just really tore me up. But I prayed all weekend about it, and I went to work that Monday morning. I sure didn't feel like going. I was just a wreck. And here I am now seeing Al-Anon over a year, so you see how slow I am to learn. And I was still praying about it, and I suddenly realized that God meant for me to love this boy. It was really such a revelation that I felt on the inside that I just really felt like jumping up and dancing with joy, that I could see that this was the answer, that I had been so full of resentment and hatred that I wasn't getting anywhere. And I called him on the telephone, and he came over, and I made an appointment for him to come over that afternoon. And he came in the front door charging in because he didn't know what had happened. And he was white, and his jaw was stuck out. He was ready to do battle. And he sat down, and I told him that I realized that I had been wrong, that I needed to make amends to him, that I was making myself sick through this resentment toward him, and that while I felt that some of the things he had done were wrong, that what I was doing was so much worse, and that I wanted him to know that I loved him, and that we'd just start all over again. We'd have a talk about, a heart-to-heart talk, and we did. But the thing was that he looked at me like, you know, I don't believe it. And then he says, you really mean that? And I said, I do. And his face just lit up like somebody had turned on a light. And it was this that made me realize the one about that you can't harbor resentments, and that you have to make amends to people. That I had been blocking the channel to my higher power by being every day full of resentment toward this boy. And so every day since that time, I try to take care of my resentments as they come up. In the one step about having had a spiritual awakening, I was praying about that. I wasn't either. What I was doing was just meditating. One, but sometimes I just sit and let my mind be open, and I guess you call it listening. And suddenly the question came, why? And what I realized what I meant was, why, Lord, all those years of suffering, when life is so beautiful, why couldn't I have known it before now? Why so many wasted years? And I call it an answer. As I prayed this, I realized that I had been coming to Al-Anon for me. And that's just great. But that I should be coming to Al-Anon for other people too, that really God meant for me to have helped myself first and then to be reaching out to others. And it was a wonderful feeling to realize that my life, those years that I felt were wasted, were not really wasted, that I could use them in reaching out to help other people. So I guess I'll just be hobbling to Al-Anon until I'm dead, I guess, because I really believe that this is what God means for me to do. I think the 12 steps and the slogans are a way of life, and I try to make them a part of my life. I show them not perfect, but I as I said, I do feel like I've made progress. Salita said something last night that had been on my mind, and that was one night this week, thinking that I wish the whole world could have the kind of thing that we have in AA and Al-Anon, because I really believe that this is what God meant, or the way that God meant for people to live. And I wish I could give him that old shot in the arm. It's like you're talking about. The last 2 years in Chuck's in my life, I think, have been the hardest in the fact that we've had a lot of heartache. And I don't know what I would have done without God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change.
Thank you, Nancy. I have a double pleasure this morning. Just before the meeting started, I was given the pleasure of also introducing our Alateen speaker for the morning. I met this beautiful young lady last night and immediately fell in love with her. I don't know a great deal about her, except that she's an Alateen from Columbus. I'm going to introduce to you now Debbie N.
I am Debbie Nolan, and I'm an Alateen, and I'm 16 and the daughter of an alcoholic. I'm the third child in our family out of four, and I'm truly happy that I can be in such a family. My father is the alcoholic in our family, and we have really had some rough years, you know, since I can remember. We lived with him as faithfully as we have really tried, you know. And January was a year ago. Star Mount Group of Columbus organized an Alateen group, and our sponsor was Mrs. Betty N., and she told us to try this program at least 3 times, and if we felt it was helping us, to come back. I really did. I came back, and I've been back ever since. I've been back to Alateen because it's really made me think of myself as well as to consider others. I really have been able to appreciate my parents a little more now that I've been in Alateen, and that I can really help them try and solve their problems as well as mine. And Mrs. Betty has been an awfully help in helping me to understand the problem in our family that I know many people have, that I thought that I was one of a kind, you know. And I didn't know much about alcoholism until I came into this program. And when I did come into Alateen, I thought I was helping my father because I just didn't know how I could help myself any. When I realized that my dad was an alcoholic, Miss Betty tried to explain to me what an alcoholic was and that it was a disease and that it was incurable. When she told me about the incurable alcohol, I cried because I didn't think my dad would ever get well, and I just didn't know what to do. And I always thought an alcoholic was someone that hung out and run down bars and stayed drunk 24 hours a day. I just didn't know what one was. And I knew my dad didn't drink that much, just about 2 weeks at the time, every other week. Not that much. But I thought my dad was perfect. Except he drank a little. I just didn't know what to think. And Mrs. Betty helped me so much in helping me to understand the problem in my family. My dad has almost become a new person since he's been in AA because he has new friends and he does more. He does less drinking, an awful less drinking. And he's just got a better life. as in AA, and he's happier, almost 100%. And when my dad was an active alcoholic, I couldn't invite my friends over because I knew that if I did, my dad came home drunk from work, that, oh, how embarrassing. I didn't know what I'd do. But, so I just never invited many people over, unless they were real close and they knew the problem in our home. And when people invited me over, I didn't want to accept the invitation because, well, if I went over to their house, then I'd be obligated to have them come over to my house, and then I just didn't know what to do. And during school, I tried not to think of my dad's problem and my problem very much, because if I did, I knew it would pull my grades down, and, well, it was just kind of hard to do. But I can see, when I look over last year, that it did pull my grades down, because comparing my this year grades with my subjects last year, I have, not that they are any easier by far, but that they have pulled up, and that they are a little better from last year. And I think I respect my parents a little more since they're in Al-Anon and Alateen and AA, and because they understand me a little better, and it helps me to understand them a little better. And my mother, I'm real proud of, because she never downed my father while he was drinking. She never tried to turn us against him at any time. And I just love her for this. And I love my father as much because, well, he just tried to do so good and just failed sometimes. And my dad's friendships in AA are just wonderful. I don't know what I'd do if they weren't a program like this, that he could have friends that could truly be with him, because AA is just great. And I want to thank God tonight, today, for granting me the serenity to accept the things I couldn't change, other people, and the wisdom or the courage to change the things I could myself, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Debbie. You did a fine job.
Just take a 10-minute break now. We won't close this meeting. I'll take a 10-minute break and be back in your seats in just 10 minutes for a little break. We go right on with our AA meeting. Thank you.